Welcome to Editing Aloud, and I have with me, as always, a panel of South Africa's best journalists following a ratings downgrade on Friday evening. And yet the Rand has kept pumping. Ron Darby, what are the rating agencies telling us, and why is the Rand apparently ignoring it?
The rating agencies are telling us all that we've been speaking about for the past, I think, past 2-3 years, about deterioration of our politics, in particular around our SOEs. And the Rand's reaction this week is... it's quite surprising. I think maybe it's regarding the new Fed chair or something like international factors totally ignoring us. But again, the Rand is always, which I love about the Rand is it's a lot about other factors beyond just our Jacob Zuma factor. There's other factors around emerging markets and whatever sentiment is changing there, and with the new Fed chairman is. So I think that's fed into the Rand more than anything else around our rates. I think that perhaps it was already factored in that we would get the downgrade in truth. Remember we spoke about it last week that there's some people are saying it's already factored in. So in truth, maybe Monday, the past week has proved that it's factored in already in the valuation.
Tim, were you surprised that S&P downgraded us or that Moody's didn't?
No. I think one of the factors in the fact that the Rand's held up is that that they didn't both downgrade at the same time, at the same level, you know, in the same way, you know, so there was a difference between the two, which meant that we stayed in the city bond index. If they had both downgraded us, I think it would have been a different. If they'd been both full downgrades. The interesting thing to me about the S&P was, you know, there was a lot of talk about how S&P around the world is trying to unify its local currency rating and its foreign currency rating, and you know a lot of people expected that we would the local currency would be downgraded, but the foreign currency would stay where it was, right? But they didn't, so they downgraded both by one notch. So I think that's slightly strange internationally that you should have a differential rate local and foreign. It's basically because, you know, for us, the local currency rating is the important one, obviously, mm-hmm. because most of our bonds are denominated in rands. That was the bad news part. The good news part was that Moody's didn't downgrade us but put us on a negative watch. That was also a little bit surprising, I thought. I mean, you know, what worries me about that is that they transparently sort of saying everything depends on the ANC conference. You know,
and the budget.
Yeah. And I wonder whether that's the right way to do ratings. I just don't think that, you know, it should be hinge on something so immediate as a singular political decision. They should. I don't
but
know.
But it's
maybe
a long-lasting political decision, right? It's in the last 5 years. So if there's a change, it's as much as everything hinge on December, but. Like if it's a switch away from Jacob Zuma, it's quite a significant flip in South Africa's politics for the next 18 months at least until the next election.
And the hope is that whoever does come in will put in place mechanisms that can turn the economy around sustainably. It's quite an important decision to perhaps wait for the except of course we have disappointed them at every. Moody's has always been giving us a chance, and always we've just been slapping them across the face and say, "Aye, Hamba." That's what they are going to get this time round again. If the ANC election doesn't go the way of Cyril Ramaphosa,
yeah, I mean I understand that. I can see that point. But on the other hand, Cyril Ramaphosa, assume that the good news in their, you know, from their perspective, is that Cyril Ramaphosa gets in, and you know, kind of more sustainable. You know, budgetary outlook is adopted, et cetera, and the economy starts lifting, all of that. Does he really have the power to do that? I mean, he's not being elected president of the country. If that happens at all, it only happens in 2 years' time. He's head of the party. That changes the balance, of course, and so on. But nevertheless, it's not an immediate change. So why then delay it for 90 days?
But the thing is, when you're not party president of the ANC, we've seen the evidence over under Mbeki. Like we have that evidence to show that you're toothless. Whatever you're doing in government,
exactly.
It doesn't matter at all.
I was just going to say.
The Tuli House talks against you.
Exactly, Rod, that's the point. I was just going to say Tim is not too young to to remember that we've had a president who was not ANC president, and he lasted only 9 months, only because the seat of power decided that man, no.
Yeah.
And now this president is even worse. They have been trying at least, I'm aware of at least three times inside the NAC of the ANC itself, forget parliament. I'll put this right now, put my head on the block and say, if Cyril Ramaphosa becomes president in December, Jacob Zuma will not be president in
March. I have something. You know this fees commission, this free fees thing? I was thinking about it last night. Like, you know, everyone's saying Zuma wants to introduce this for his candidate, NDZ, whatever it's going to be. I think it's for him. Can you imagine Ramaphosa does win, right? And January comes, and he fast tracks, and there's a free fees. It's like the president has made a statement, South Africa's free education for kids, tertiary education. Can then Ramaphosa recall this president? That's such a popular thing to do. It's brilliant. It's a masterstroke. Can you?
Except, Ron, that it hasn't turned out to be such a masterstroke, because effectively the president has backtracked, as we discovered this week in a series of... In fact, in the Treasury's press release responding to the ratings, it said... we've decided. It's been decided that we're going to phase this thing in. It's not going to be all in one go. Whereas, in fact, President Zuma had in mind that it would be a big bang pre-ANC conference thing.
I think it's still in his
plans. And it's all gone quiet. I'm sure it's still in his sights, but there's been a real backtracking, and more significantly, this week, we've had, more significantly, but in some ways more disturbingly, we've had the president making fiscal policy by press release. We have the budget, we have the process, we have the numbers, and then not 6 weeks later, we have a one-page press release, Tim, which says the president has directed that we have to find fiscal consolidation measures worth $40 billion. In one way, it's good. It's sort of if belated response to the rating agency's concern. In another way, this is really highly
disturbing. It's bonkers. I mean, it's just bonkers. I mean, it was in the forum where this. These kind of big announcements are supposed to be made. Came and went. The finance minister said we're in real trouble, as if we didn't know.
The ratings agencies downgraded.
Then after that, after all of that, we get a one-page press release saying that suddenly somehow we're going to find, R30 billion in tax.
$25 billion in spending cuts.
Spending cuts.
And another 15, bringing to $30 billion for next year.
Where those that spending and where those cuts are going to take place hasn't been specified. I mean, we knew something about that this was happening because you could see the whole process of there was going to be a budget, general budget statement that was going to be discussed in cabinet. The essentially what's happened is that behind the scenes, the presidency and the finance ministry have been wrestling over who actually makes the decision about what the budget actually says, where the actual allocations are made.
Isn't this something that the minister should have said, the finance minister should have said in August,
September?
This is his statement, which is now almost tells you the credibility of our finance minister. He's none within his own cabinet. Clearly, Zuma taking this away from him, and the markets never believed that budget anyway. It was received badly, and here's the president having to come out and like, okay, so this one.
And of course,
Kigabo should have
the
said.
The president is also talking pure hot air. Nothing like that. There will be no cuts.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. But he felt under so much pressure that the president of the country needed to be seen to be doing something. If he did believe what he said, I mean, think about it. Pravin Gordhan, they left him out of cabinet when he said, let's cap public sector employment, let's stop drinking wine at government events. Little things, symbolically as they may be, the president has got the power within him to fire half that cabinet, starting with all the deputy ministers, if he believes he is trying to save this country money. He is paying 79 people, deputy ministers and ministers,
don't you think Treasury has done well in terms of state largesse, public sector wage bill, and in terms of hiring? I mean, there's been a freeze in state public sector employment for a long time, right? So they have managed to do that one part,
no freeze
that one
in
part,
spending.
Right? Yeah, no, they're frozen in employment. So the public sector took up 1 million more public servants. They have managed in some way to manage that. Well, as best they can.
Not the wage bill, but at least they've kept
they've it. Kept that, at least that was something that
I'm
you
pleased you are so optimistic.
You've got to find something. I mean, SOE management has been
I'm pleased you guys are so optimistic. Yeah. They may have frozen cuts because they are overstaffed anyway. But what they have not frozen is the chowing of our money. Malusi Kigaba is surrounded by 4 or 5 bodyguards, for example, and they spend money like there's no tomorrow in the government, unnecessarily so.
Isn't a concern? I mean, those are really, in the context of a 1.3 trillion rand budget, those are quite small cuts. Mm-hmm. Is the worry not that they're going to cut the big stuff, the infrastructure, and to what impact is that now going to have? Well, first of all, do we believe them, as Siko says? Yeah. Is this a credible anything?
I mean, and if
it is credible, what is the danger?
Well, you know, the problem here is the market seemed to like it. You know, this is where we started this whole discussion. Mm. Is the market seemed to like the idea I think what they liked was that, that the government seems to have, the penny seems to have dropped. That that cuts are necessary. You know, that was the big thing that the ratings agency were talking about. Because, the government was saying, well, we'll keep things static, and the rating agencies were saying, no. You can't keep things static. We want to see cuts. So now they've announced, 40 billion rands worth of cuts. I mean, as you say, this is a 40 billion and a 1 trillion rand budget. It's not exactly an enormous sort of cutting process, but at least it's, at least the expenditure is pointing downwards. Mm. And that's such a new and novel thing for us.
But it's also, as you say, it's also 30 billion rand of more of tax hikes next year. Now, what is that going to do to confidence?
They will cut all infrastructure spending and then bring
it depends on who's raising those taxes. That's what it depends on next year, and on confidence. So it depends who's raising those taxes. If it's NDZ, about like NDZ ANC raising our taxes, or confidence. But if it's if it's cushioned and sold to us nicely by maybe a nicer looking either Zweli Mkhize or Ramaphosa, anyone else except for that camp, you might not, on confidence.
That is one of the issues, because one of the differences between Standard & Poor's and Moody's is Standard & Poor's essentially took the line that whatever happened in December wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah.
Now, is what happens in December going to make a difference to growth? Because if it does, it solves, if growth actually picks up on whatever December's outcome in, then that goes some way to solving.
I think there'll be a definite immediate uptick in confidence. I do feel
enough to really
just confident, like just
what if Ramaphosa gets it,
or anyone else that isn't part of the NDZ camp, like just as I'm, yeah. So maybe it's Zweli Mkhize, like surprise can or whatever it may be. But if there's that feel that there has been some political shift, like proper shift in the country, I think there will be that uptick in confidence.
I don't know how long it will last. Trust me, if NDZ gets in, there's not going to be an uptick in
confidence. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying
we're
NDZ
take a break,
or Zoom,
guys,
I'm saying.
But we are going to come back to this very subject after the break. Welcome back to Editing Aloud. Tim Cohen, Business Day reporting this morning that President Zuma is repositioning himself.
Yes.
No longer the backer of a particular candidate, but rather the bringer of unity to the party. Now, please run us through this logic. Why would he do a thing like that? And is it going to work?
Well, I mean, I think that this is seriously good news, right? Because if he thought that his former wife was winning the race, he would stay backing her, right? But now that he's been sufficiently shaken to think that he needs to kind of reposition himself in this whole process, so now he's positioning himself as a kind of centrist figure, who will kind of help the Congress take place and will ensure that the fight is fair, and he'll stand above the I think this is creepy, it's obvious that he wants to influence the outcome of the race, and thinks that his most likely position to enable that to happen is not by being a backer of one of the candidates. What this all means, particularly in the is unclear, but the good thing about it is that it does give some impetus to the conference itself. So the, you know, one of the first fear was that the conference would just collapse in, if his position is the conference must take place, that's a big step forward.
Ron, is the conference going to happen? Because it seems to me that, as far as the market's concerned, the bottom worst case scenario is no conference.
I think it's going to happen. There's no stopping it. I mean, the shock of it not happening, I think it's going to happen. I'm pretty certain about it, actually. But you know, this is the ANC. This is the new ANC, so you'll all be surprised. But I mean, they built some. So, it will happen. I just have to go with that.
And what's it going to take, Sikonati, to make it happen? Is it going to take this kind of unity push or a third candidate?
The parties will indeed gather in at Nasrec in Johannesburg, where the conference will be taking place. It is what happens inside that tent that determines what happens. Now we have seen in the Eastern Cape that even chairs can play a big role in deciding the election. That's what we will see at Nasrec. The only way the conference can conclude successfully is when just a few people get beaten up and leave the conference and leave behind people, large numbers enough to correct, and I don't know what the quorum is in terms of the ANC constitution, but definitely people will be chased out of that room. And if the ANC is as heavily divided as we think it is, like if it's divided in half, there will be no quorum left inside the room, therefore the conference collapses. But it will be settled physically. I actually did also see, yes, it will.
Physically.
Mark you my words, there will be fights there, and the losing party, whoever that may be, will try to collapse the conference.
2007, there were fights, and that was heated.
That's the argument today.
What you don't know is that
a deal will have to be done.
What you don't know is that in 2007, there were at least 3 minibus taxis that were outside the tent with so-called military veterans, Umkhonto Sizwe veterans, who had come from KwaZulu-Natal because they were convinced that Thabo Mbeki and Smart Ngonyama and Andile Ngcaba were going to rig the conference. And they were there ready to solve this thing, as someone told me a few weeks ago, the African way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. I mean, one of the most crucial things is that both of the candidates must think that they have a good chance of winning through the voting process. Mm. And the good news is that is so far happening. Mm. So both of them believe that they are winning.
Yes.
So this is what we want. We want them both to go in to believe they're winning. And then after the vote, then the fighting starts.
Yeah, they can squabble.
So that would be the... But don't forget, there's two votes, right? There's the voting for the top six. Then only the next day is there the voting for the NEC. It will be obvious.
And the president
after
is
the
first, then the rest of the top six?
That's the key. Now the ANC, someone in their wisdom there, and you wouldn't think there are still wise people in the ANC, but it seems they are. Someone decided this time round we will start with the president. Mm. Whereas before, all the votes were called out at the same time. People had to vote, and then they go count, and they come and say, these guys have won. This time, they will vote for one position, the president, go count, come back and announce the result.
So that opens the way for a slate to be devised, which could include the losers.
Exactly.
Yes.
And
so
that is so that's very important.
What's so bad about having Nkosazana Dlamini as a deputy? As part of this unity Zuma use. It's scary though, but I don't know.
Well, I just don't think they are. I mean, this is war, you know.
It's war.
I don't think they are. You know, I mean, first of all, you were talking about a third candidate. I think there's no third candidate.
Yeah, it's true.
Two candidates.
I know. I'm being
a lot of people are talking third candidate.
Yeah, but it's forget about it. Neither of the candidates wants to make any concessions.
Mm.
Why, if you are the winning candidate, would you include the losing candidate slate? Why would you do that? I mean, what is the incentive to?
If you are, if you're thinking unity, if you really, if you are,
but you don't want unity.
What's
going
to happen,
Ramaphosa,
right? If NDZ wins and Cyril is he leaves politics, whatever it could be, that's the end of the ANC. It totally fractures. It's gone, right? I think. And again, if Ramaphosa wins, there's going to, this NDZ faction, this president, it's going to be a, how do you deal with this?
We've heard some breaking news.
Oh, sorry.
apparently. The ANC's Free State Conference has been called off.
Called off?
Really?
Called off. Now, what does that mean?
Uh-huh.
Well,
okay, that's interesting.
Now,
that means people, right?
I was actually just thinking, yes. What are these provincial general council meetings going to tell us about the process?
Yes.
And now it seems.
But, well, there's already two, don't forget, there's two already two regions in which there is a court case, an unresolved court case taking place. So they tried to kind of organize themselves around this problem by declaring this conference to be a conference of
branches
rather than a conference of regions. So they don't need the regional, they don't need the regional conferences to have to be finished before the main conference takes place. The other thing that you have to remember is that the ANC's constitution does not allow the NEC to exist beyond its 5-year term. There's nothing. They can change it at the conference, right? Mm. But if they don't have a conference, then the NEC falls away.
Then we have no structure in place.
And then there's nothing. Yeah.
So there is at least.
There's an incentive. The idea is that there's an incentive now.
The fact that that conference has been called off in the Free State. Remember who was pushing for it? It was Nkosazana Dlamini's people, and they had there were these allegations that it's been irregular, everything there is manufactured to favour Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. Fact that now it's been called off, again talks to the fact that no one can be sure until the votes have been counted.
In December.
And these guys in the Free State are in charge, and Ace Magashule is general secretary in the Dlamini Zuma slate. And they have pushed this thing and came out and said the Free State wants Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, only 44 branches want Cyril, and now look what happens. There will be court cases all the way through December, and even after that conference there will be some conflict.
3 weeks to go, and I think we are going to be obsessing about this a lot more, so I'm going to leave us with something to talk about and go on to Sikonathi. I can't miss out on your absolutely favorite subject, which is Eskom, which along with the other ratings got downgraded, which means it goes from junk to even junkier. Now, what is going on at Eskom, and how bad is it getting?
Hillary, for any company to even get on the rating scale, it has to pass a few hurdles. So Eskom is right now like almost falling off that scale. No rating agencies will be able to rate it at this rate. As I know that so many ratings that I've just said there.
There are a few more notches to go down the ladder, but they're going down.
They are on the third last now. Give it 2 years. If we, in fact, the next 18 months is key. Depending,
the bottom is D, which is default, right?
There you go. Depending what happens in December,
that's a country.
In the next 18 months, Eskom will fall completely off the rating scale. It will be in default because, as it is now, Madusi Kikaba doesn't have money to hand over to Eskom. Mm. And that is the economy. It's not just a company.
I was going to say, if Eskom defaults, we
it's
don't have
the
economy.
It's the biggest risk. Yeah. It's Eskom phoning me right now.
Yeah. Don't take it.
No, I mean, the incredible thing is that there's supposed to be a government guarantee.
There's
supposed to be a board by tomorrow, which there's not.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that I think prompted the yet another downgrade today.
And that guarantee is useless if the person who's guaranteeing it
doesn't have the money.
And that is the problem here.
The amount of money that they've...
And now, in fact, speaking of the government's no money, the South African Revenue Services this week, Ron Dobby, has also been in the news with more about Mr. Tom Moyane, the commissioner who has reinstated the head of individual and business tax, Mr. Makwakwa, whose name is by no means cleared.
Yeah.
The parliamentary committee sort of reprimanded Moyane. I mean, what? How can such a thing happen? In our last few minutes.
This is a guy clearly being backed by number one. To get confidence going in SARS, it's only one thing. We need to remove Tom Moyane, whatever his virtues are, whatever they may be, to number one, there has to be a leadership change within SARS, and quickly. I think South Africa's already, the lack of faith in SARS is troubling. especially regarding how much we need to raise in revenues going forward. So that's where we are right
we
now.
Can
only out. Only
we
out
can out. Let him off with dignity. Yeah. He's reaching 65 next year.
Who? This is Tom?
Tom Moyane. Oh. So that's a retirement age. We can
so
release him.
What is the thing about sort of like everybody has to go with dignity?
Because we don't like
Robert Mugabe went with dignity.
We are a good people. We don't like humiliating those who have humiliated us.
We're very fair that way.
We're very fair. We're good people. We give Mugabe dignity, give him a second chance, give him a whole week when he would just chop off your neck.
Yes.
But we're good people like that. So Moyane can leave next year, particularly if his boss now, Jacob Zuma, loses. And by Jacob Zuma, I mean his candidate.
Right, yes. As long as we don't get Mr. Makwakwa in his place. And Sikonathi, in the Financial Mail this week, Tangled Up with Tom is the title of the editor's column, which reflects on the role which Hogan Lovells, the law firm, has played in investigating or not investigating Mr. Makwakwa. So this is another professional services firm which was either briefed very narrowly or really has not done
And of course was happy to take on the fees for it, knowing exactly this is a whitewash. And that is what we are seeing at my other favorite company, Eskom, as well. There's a whitewash of a disciplinary hearing going on there. When they are done with this one and Machelakov comes back next week, they have to start again with a disciplinary hearing on him, on Trillion. Again, it will be defined narrowly and so as to exonerate himself, as it has happened now. That's exactly what happened at SARS with Makwakwa. And Hogan Lovells, of course, was only too happy to take the money.
And I do wonder now if any professional services firms in South Africa can or should be taking on public sector clients anymore, because it just seems that's an absolute nightmare.
It's not.
And that's all we have time for, having raised that question for next week. See you again soon.